It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 555. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers, unattended and on-demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. We have a voicemail that I'm going to get to in the beginning segment. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and also Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And you can also like my other Facebook website, which is MikeNationNet. I have a lot to get to. Since the last two shows, I've been talking a lot about Windows 10. Not even going to mention that tonight. I have a little hack I want to talk about that I used on a thermostat in my hotel room in Chicago. I want to share that tip. I have the voicemail from Kate in Canada, and then I have a stack of email that I've been meaning to get to from the last few weeks on follow-ups to different topics over the last couple weeks, plus all of the new questions and lots of great questions from listeners. So first, when I was out in Chicago for the CompTIA ChannelCon, I check into the room on Saturday and the room is pretty hot, but yet the thermostat is set at 65. Now, when I walk in the room, I can hear the air conditioning going on and the vent, there's cold air coming out. Well, why is the room so hot? I thought, well, okay. So I look, I see maybe, you know, I just need it to be touched or something. I go out and we have dinner. Matter of fact, I have dinner with Mike, who picked me up from the airport, Taz Cools, who's the moderator in the chat. And we wait for Carrie to get in from the airport and he gets a shuttle to get to the hotel. So it's a few hours. And then Carrie and I, we go back to the room and the room's hot. I was like, this can't be. There must be something wrong with this thermostat. So I call to the front desk and I ask for maintenance. I said, I want someone to come up and take a look at this. They send someone up and the guy has a smile on his face and he says, there's no problem. It's motion activated. The air conditioner will not kick on until it knows someone is in the room. I said, well, this is crazy because I'm only going to be in the room to sleep and it's going to take all night to cool down the room. I want my temperature in the 60s. I want this room 65 or 66 degrees. I want to come in here and I need it to be cold. How can we fix this? There's got to be a workaround. So he tells me the hack, the workaround. On the side, there's a centigrade Fahrenheit button to change how you want to view the temperature on the panel. He says, hold that in for a few seconds, and then the letters BP appear for bypass. So you put the thermostat in bypass mode, and that'll work for 48 hours where you don't have to touch it, and it will run constantly. This is how they can save energy and save some money on all the rooms. And I'm thinking, how many different hotel rooms this must have been what was activated and why it's so warm and takes so long to cool down. This happened to me in Arizona the year before. So what's the takeaway here? If you are traveling and you are in this situation, look at the model of the thermostat and Google a bypass. There's got to be a bypass for all of the thermostats. And I never thought of that if it wasn't for the maintenance man taking pity on me and sharing that tip. And now I'm like, okay, that's it. Next time I'm in this situation where it's warm, but yet the temperature's set, I'm going to Google it. I'm going to find out, you know, pull up the manual, see what the bypass is, and do that. And if not, then what you need to do is bribe the maintenance guy, give him a good tip, tell him, look, I'll hook you up here if you share the bypass with code with me. I wanted to share that in case you're traveling this summer and you run into that situation. Give a listen to this voicemail from Kate.
Hi, Mike. It's Katester, Kate Eels, talking to you from sunny and hot Kelowna up here in British Columbia, Canada. I wanted to let you know about a battle that I had with a browser hijack called Search Bull. It's your typical browser hijack in that it grabs your default search engine and it also hijacks your homepage. So then from there, obviously, it messes with your search results. And all that is so standard now that there shouldn't be anything surprising, but there always is. This took every tool under the sun to get it out, and then also to get rid of all its malicious little pals that it invited to the party, like PC Optimizer and My PC Backup, and just a big whack of garbage. So after all the tools were used up, I still had to go in and brute force out the remaining things. This guy had Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Chrome on his Windows 7 machine. He decided he didn't want Chrome, so that fix was easy. I got rid of Chrome. In Firefox, I still had to check for a bunch of add-ons and manually remove those. And then I had to go in and clean out the search engines, including Search Bull, that was still in there. And then I had to reset the home page. And honestly, I've done this so often now that I just have a check sheet, and I go down that check sheet just to keep myself from falling into a trance and clicking okay, and missing something. All right, at this point, Chrome is completely gone, Firefox is completely clean, and everything was going well, but tedious. But when I started on Internet Explorer, every time I opened Internet Explorer from the shortcut pin to the start menu, or from the shortcut pin to the taskbar, or from the shortcut that he had on the desktop, I still got the Search Bull start page, and it was driving me crazy. I kept doubling back on myself to make sure I'd run everything, and I mean everything. I restored the hosts file to its original upright position. I ran every tool known to mankind. I went in manually to double check on that, and I could not make it stop. Every time I clicked on one of those icons, it went to that page. And then it hit me. These were shortcuts, right? So that stupid piece of crapware had changed the normal looking shortcut icons for IE and just made them a shortcut to the Search Bull page. I mean, incredible, right? I removed them. I navigated to the real executable for Internet Explorer, and that opened the homepage that I'd been trying to set there for the last half hour or longer. So I used that to recreate the shortcuts and put them back where the bad shortcuts had been. And I did not charge the customer for the last half hour when all I did was the same thing over and over and not fix the problem. The point of the story, two takeaways here, all right? First, Search Bull changes icons. And I'm guessing that is probably not the only one that does that. It's just the first one that I encountered that did it. So I hope to save somebody else 30 to 45 minutes of pain and suffering with this tip. But the second takeaway is no matter how much you believe in documenting your process, sometimes a check sheet only limits me. I needed more to use my imagination and less to use my pencil. So I hope that helps somebody else. So, hey, Mike, looking forward to seeing you in Toronto. Hope your passport's in order. Talk to you soon. Thanks for everything.
See, Kate already knows about the Toronto meetup. We are, real quick, before I address Kate's voicemail, and we were talking about this in the pre-show, I don't have the exact dates, but we are having a meetup. It's in August 2016, and it's in Toronto. Update your passports, get your passport if you don't have it, and try to plan on this geek meet in Toronto. It's going to be at least a three-day event that I am assisting with Instant House Call and other podcasters. It's going to be a lot of fun, so try to make that. Now, for that tip, Kate, that's brilliant. I'm sorry that you had to suffer through that to then discover the icons, but what a great tip. It's something so simple that we now add to our list. Delete the shortcuts and create new shortcuts from the exact executable. That's great tip. Kate, thank you for sharing that. Let's get to the stack of emails here. This is from Jim. You mentioned Ubiquiti in a recent show, and I explored it with the idea of a rural neighborhood system where we'd pay for one high-speed internet connection and connect it to a router that five or six homes could access. I ran across the wiki article about the product and see at the bottom there's a recent report that it has been hacked in the UK as part of a botnet, and just wanted to point that out. And this is Ubiquiti Networks Wikipedia page, and I'm going to link that. And Jim, thank you for that. And I want to add something else, that when I ran into other users at the conference, I was told that with Ubiquiti, there's a problem that if you need to change the settings, you have to do a hard reset of the access point. You cannot remotely make the change sometimes. This is not all the time, but that would be a great inconvenience to me if I'm putting these access points that are way, way up that you need a lift to get to it in a manufacturing facility. Starting to hear a couple little negatives here about Ubiquiti. That's why you got to kind of take it all in and listen to everybody and then make an evaluation. Jim, thank you for sharing that. This is from Dan. And I'm a little behind on the podcast, so hope this is not old news. We use small business Cisco routers without the access points built in. Then we get them Unify AP Ubiquiti. The small business Cisco with Wi-Fi built in is buggy. This is why we break it up, and it also makes it cheap and easy to expand the network as a client grows. Thanks for the show. Keep up the extraordinarily excellent work. And this is Dan. Thank you very much. This is from Michael, and it's Netgear Business Firewalls. Just finished listening to show 552 and heard the letter about the tech that might be putting in a Netgear business class router. Netgear is getting out of the business class UTM business January 1, 2017. Thought this would be good FYI for other techs so they can start looking for a replacement while there is plenty of time. And he has the link. I also have been looking at open mesh for Wi-Fi setups and would like to make people aware of another option. XClean is now in the cloud-managed Wi-Fi business Exclaim is a division of Ruckus. So there is a very established community behind this move. They are still new, so there are some features like the branded captive portal that are scheduled to be released this August might be a good option to keep an eye on. So, Michael, thank you very much. This is from Roger. Now, remember there was a recommendation on the FreeMake utility, and then some listeners wrote in about the malware that was within FreeMake. Mike, I was really surprised to hear the negative review about FreeMake, YouTube to MP3 downloader. I was the one who suggested it, and I have not had any malware or spyware installed on my system. I installed it with Unchecky running, and no other programs were installed. I just installed FreeMake it on a new build machine. Ran malware bytes, and nothing was found. I did some research and found that if you decline offers for other software, OpenCandy deletes itself. OpenCandy is even bundled with CD Burner XP. It looks like it's just the way the makers of freeware get money by pushing other software. Let's face it, almost all freeware tries to make money by doing this. If you are careful and don't just click next and decline all offers, you should be fine. Or, in my case, use Unchecky. Here is a link to the article. It even shows you can install software from the command prompt with the command line switch /nocandy. I will have that link. Roger, thank you very much. This is from Martin Obando. Met him in Chicago. It was very nice. He sent this actually before the meetup in Chicago, and this is the YouTube MP3. Mike, listening to your show about audio and YouTube, there is a site called listentoyoutube.com. You put in your YouTube video, and you can download the MP3 of it. Awesome tip, Martin. Thank you very much. And again, that is listentoyoutube.com. This is from Steve. Hi, Mike. This is Disagreement and a Question. Should be interesting, right, with that title. I enjoy your podcast very much, even though I'm retired 73-year-old with only a cursory knowledge of computer tech. In fact, after the recession, I decided not to try to get my business back up and running because audio video today requires a deeper knowledge of IP than I wanted to learn. Nevertheless, I really enjoy your show, and I've spent over 40 years in customer home electronics, AV, phone, CCTV, and rudimentary networking, mostly on the west side of Los Angeles. In show 552, you described adding a second receiver to an existing system. I take it that the main system was a 5.1 home theater of some type. You suggested adding a second receiver to feed speakers in other rooms. If I properly understood the situation, I have a different approach. All AV receivers have at least a second zone. My Yamaha has four zones. And by the way, I'll explain why in two cases I was unable to take advantage of the different zones. I use the second zone of a typical receiver to feed the rest of the house. In the old days, I'd drive the house speakers with a Dynaco tube amp built from a kit. Today, I use an ATI Sonance or Crown Stereo or multi-channel amp. Each set of speakers should have its own local volume control. If you use good stereo amp, you can wire them in parallel without hurting it and without using a speaker interface box. The advantage of such an arrangement is sharing sources between the main system and the house speakers. It centralizes all the equipment And you can control the main system and the house speakers with a single programmable RF remote. I've sold many a remote in my day, all the way up to Creston touch panels. My personal preference in a simple remote from Universal Remote Control. That he has a question that I'll get to in a minute. Steve, the home theater with the one Marantz that absolutely could handle different zones was in the basement, literally almost two floors below, where all the speakers came into the kitchen. I would have had to rerun or extend the wiring of all of the speakers down to that home theater. They did not want to be in that room to control the sound for the rest of the house. It was very independent. And the rest of the house, the speakers came into the kitchen where it made sense because it was easier to control the volume and everything's already set up and this is already pre-wired that we inherited when he bought the house. So it just needed an audio upgrade of the equipment from an old Sony, and I got a second Marantz. Now, that's client one. Client two, I needed a second Marantz because the first one was locked down and only for the surround sound system for the living room, and everything was programmed in devices that I was unfamiliar with, and I would have had to break everything down and reprogram everything. And the owner did not want to do that because the ease of use, the way everything was set up, his wife could use it, and there was, we didn't want to make any changes, or at least my client. I offered to reprogram everything, maybe introduce a different universal remote. My client made the decision, no, let's get a second Marantz and hook that up just for the speakers for the rest of the house. So that was a client decision, and I deployed that, and it's working beautiful. So both homes are working beautiful, and the clients were willing to spend the extra money for the second receiver. Now, on to Steve's question. I've switched to Mac from my main computer and don't regret the change. However, I still use a Windows laptop to program my house AV and phone systems. I'm using Windows 7 Pro 32-bit, and I'm considering upgrading to Windows 10. Some of the programs I use I can no longer update because I'm no longer a certified dealer. If I upgrade to 10, do you think these programs will work? Oh boy, I have no idea. That's a hard one. If you do an in-place upgrade, I believe your current software is going to work, but I can't guarantee that because I've done some upgrades and I have utilities that aren't working. The consensus is it would. So I'm going to give you a suggestion in a second. Do you think these programs will work? And if for some reason they don't, will I be able to restore my computer to 7 the way it was, the way it is now? Or should I just forget the whole upgrade thing and leave it alone? Steve, here's my suggestion. Get a good system image from the Windows backup command. Create a repair disk, then get an external drive, do a full system image. When you do an in-place upgrade from Windows 10, you have 30 days to go back and do a full recovery back to Windows 7. Now, we don't know if that's going to work perfectly, and we don't know what it's going to do to some of these programs. So that's why I want you to have that safety image of the way it is working perfectly now for you. So now we don't care. We can blow everything away and bring it back to that image. So I say you do that image and then go for it and then see what happens. And if you're not happy, you first try the recovery from Windows 10, and if that doesn't work, who cares? You got the image. Thank you, Steve, for your email. This is from IDCAM2. It's a software link. Hi, Mike. I just wanted you to know that I used your CombiFix link, downloaded it, and it does not work for Windows 8.1. It says wrong operating system. That is correct. And it will only work for Vista and Windows 7. They have not updated CombiFix to run under Windows 8, or for that matter, Windows 10. And I wish they would. Remember that caveat, you cannot run CombiFix in Windows 8. And I've said that, you must have missed that. I have said that before. So just keep that in mind when you're bringing out your tools for infection elimination. CombiFix is only good for Vista and Windows 7. This is from another mic, a computer help request. I'm not a computer tech, but I've been listening to your podcast weekly for well over a year. Not sure if this kind of request is down your alley, but wanted to ask you first. I have been having a blue screen of death for several months now and would like to see if this is something you determine the cause of remotely. The error is memory management and service system. I have done the memory test several times, but no indication of an error. My event log seems to show something about a kernel power 41. Is this something you can help me with, or could you refer me to someone that knows what they are doing? Would like to do it sometimes next week if possible. And thanks in advance for your help. By the way, this is a quick little lesson here. This was sent to me July 22nd. If you send me an important request from the Mike Tech to my Mike Tech Show email, I do not have the time to personally address that. Now, if you want me to consult and quickly get to you, then you want to email me at mike@mhsconsulting.net. And I will get back to you and I will tell you my rate. And we can go from there. But right now, my schedule does not allow me to, I have just way too many listeners to be able to handle every request. Now, things like this can get caught in my mailbox. If you send in a question to the Mike Tech Show, I may not get to it for several weeks and answer it. But I will get to it eventually on the show. If it's urgent, you don't want to send it. Well, you can, and sometimes I can try to get back to you, but it really depends on my schedule, and it's hard. Mike, you probably might have solved this already. I would still try to get different memory and try that. I forget, when you first sent this in, I actually Googled it for the memory management and service system. Google that error and see where it takes you for the different forums and what people are doing for that. There could be a driver conflict. I would update all your drivers. I would update your BIOS, update the chipset. Any driver that you can possibly update, I would do that. Update all your Windows updates and then give it a try. That's all I can say. Run your standard diet. I don't know if this is what computer it is. Is it a Dell? Is it an HP? If it's not self-built or custom-crafted, try the diagnostics for your hardware vendor. My son was on site this week for a client that had a problem with the laptop, and it was an HP, and I told him, hit F2, and you're going to get into the service menu and run the test. He ran the test and found that the hard drive was bad. Once we know where the problem is, it's great. I was on site with one of my clients, and they were having trouble booting and logging in. The Windows screen would just lock and stay just spinning, and they would never get the login prompt. I turned off the computer. I hit F12. It was a Dell. I ran the diagnostics, and guess what? Memory error right away for the RAM. Took out the memory. We had some new extra memory, popped it in, problem solved, everything working. Remember to use the diagnostics that comes with the manufacturer of the PC. This is from Mark. I ran into a weird problem, and a friend recommended I shoot you an email to see if you could offer some insight. A client of mine was connected via WatchGuard VPN to their remote offices. They were running Active Directory in the home office, as well as a DNS server for the network. They recently moved their law firm software, Abacus, to a cloud-hosted version. They now RD their remote desktop into their cloud server. They dropped their prior IT firm when they made this change, who then withheld the passwords for the WatchGuard. Wow. Now the password for the server has mysteriously changed, and on all but the newest computers, they cannot keep a dynamic IP address. This is regardless of what device is running DHCP. It will pick up an address, then lose it in a matter of seconds. This is happening in all five locations. When we ran Malwarebytes, which found a boatload of potentially unwanted programs and a Trojan or two on a few machines, but the problem hasn't gone away. Now it has progressed to the point that even when we assign a static IP, it reverts to dynamic, then lost the IP address, replacing the DNS entry with 10.0.0.1. But then I would expect Malwarebytes to find the DNS changer virus. Also, this customer has let their AV programs on all their computers expire. Wow. Some a few months ago, and some as long as a year or two. Thoughts? Mark, you got to really get in there first. And absolutely, you have to get the passwords. You have no choice. And this is a valuable lesson. And I will never keep all of the passwords for any of my clients. I make sure we have a document that we share that's on their site that always has every password. So this way, if something happens to me, they can take that document and hand it to any IT person. It's wrong to hold a client hostage. It's not the way to do business. I will never do business that way. You have to get the passwords. You may have to invest in some password cracking programs. This is going to cost some money. There needs to be a complete lockdown and assessment, and every system at every location needs to be scanned and cleaned. You must make sure that you're cleaning everything and that you are completely infection-free on all the systems. You got to buy whatever tools it's going to take to get into the software, into the server, and then see what's happening with the server. If you're assigning a static IP address and it's changing to DHCP, you know, there could be some policies that this IT company did that are changing this, and you got to break away of those policies. Someone who knows Active Directory and group policy needs to get into that server and do an analysis to make sure that it's working. Now, when it comes to WatchGuard, I would call the manufacturer because I'm not familiar with what it would take. Do they have a back door to be able to get into the router and to be able to fix that? If not, you're going to have to, and this is a risk, you're going to have to reset to the factory defaults, which is going to break any kind of remote access. This is not an easy job. This is going to be a lot of money, a lot of consulting in order to solve this, because you're going to have to break into the server. You're going to have to analyze everything. You're going to have to clean every system. And you're going to have to make sure that you can get to the router. My good friend Winston Wolf has some sound advice. Disconnect the internet. Make all changes needed. Change all passwords. Replace the firewall. So I was saying, hey, reset it. That's even better to just replace it. He has some more notes in the main chat. Oafcrack will make the password change, or back up the data, wipe all the OS, and start from scratch and restore only the data. Do a nuke and pave and just restore the data and just redo every computer. He's right. You know what? The cost to find the solutions and do the repair may not be worth it. And to take what Winston just recommended, that's probably the way to do it. Hire a reliable IT company. One of the biggest things is the IT company has all of those passwords. You got to start from scratch, and every single password, every password used for a computer, every password has to be changed, and it's got to be changed now. And then you got to find the passwords for each of the servers that you can't get into or all the devices, and you got to change them, because you can't trust that company. You may do all the fixes, and then they're going to come back in and make those changes again. I'd contact an attorney. What kind of contract was in place with this IT company? There could be some accountability here that they might even be able to go after them. Anyway, Mark, I hope this helps. And if I'm sorry it's taken so long to get to this message. We're only maybe a week out or so. Reach out to me, because Winston and I might be able to double team and consult here and help you out remotely and really supervise these efforts. Reach out to me if you want the consulting services, Winston Wolf and myself. This is from Alec. Hello, Mike. Technical technicians here. And I have been recently getting back into listening to your show, and it reminded me you offer great tips. Well, thank you. Glad you're back. Today, I'm sending this email because I have a question. I need to test some antivirus software, which requires me to purposely infect a computer and then run the software. Do you know of any programs that I can use to remotely monitor what is going on as the antivirus does its job? I know this is an odd question for testing purposes, and I need something that acts as a virtual behavior control system. If you have any ideas, please send them my way. So I'm putting this out there because I don't directly know of any software, I'm sure there is out there, that you can put in place, infect the computer, and then see how it's going, and then kind of rate the software that's cleaning the infection. Great idea. If anybody has any tips for that kind of software, let me know, and I will share it with Alec. This is from Tony. Hi, Mike. I was wondering why you, Carrie, and other techs like using the portable versions of utilities such as CCleaner, Revo Uninstaller, and Crystal Disk Info instead of installing them directly on the PC. Thanks, and love the show. Also, the post show of 554 was the best. Rocking out for 2 hours was the bomb. Thanks again, Tony. And Tony is in the chat right now. Tony, this is why. We don't trust our clients. We don't want to install any software and leave it behind for them to possibly not use it correctly. So we want to run them portable apps we can run from an external drive or our USB stick, so we don't have to install them. And I even regret using CCleaner because you have to install it. So you know what I do when I'm done CCleaner? I remove it. When I install Super Anti Spyware and run it the one time, I remove it. Any utility that I put on the computer, I uninstall when I'm done. I don't want to leave behind any of these utilities. So this is to prevent our clients from self-inflicted wounds where they think they're an expert and could do more damage than good. That's one of the reasons. The other one is it's just so much easier to launch these utilities from a USB stick. Or better yet, sometimes what I do, since they're not that many, I'll copy it over into a tilde fix directory on the C drive, run them all from the C drive because now they're much faster to run that way, and then delete that folder. I will. That's one of the big reasons. That's the last email for the night. If you are purchasing anything from Amazon, please use my link amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to help support the Mike Tech Show. And I really appreciate your support. Share that link. Use it. Abuse it. And I want to thank everybody for your continued support of my sponsors, Instant House Call, my affiliates, and my affiliate link for Amazon, the affiliate link for Fabs Auto Backup for Tech, which is just phenomenal when you've got to transfer information from one system to another, all the utilities. Used it on Friday for setting up a new computer for a client. Bryce Whitty's Business and Computer Kit version 3. If you have a repair shop or a consulting business, that is the definitive kit for all the forms and everything that you need. Use my link that's in the show notes. That's it. I will be back next week. Same time, same channel, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.